from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The U.S. Census predicts that by the year 2043, the United States will no longer be a majority white country. We know this. It's not news. And in many ways, America's adaptation and opening up to its changing face has already been remarkable, considering this country's racial history. And then one beautiful young woman, Nina Davuluri, Indian-American, wins the Miss America contest. A bunch of racist tweets hit the fan. And we're reminded this country is still adapting. This hour on Point, Miss America, Nina Davuluri, and more on America and diversity. Now you can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. How are we really doing in living with the reality of our own great and growing diversity? What's your story? What have you seen? What do you see? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here it was, September 15th. Not everybody goes for the Miss America pageant, but it still gets a lot of attention. And this time, it's had more than usual. Nina Davuluri crowned Miss America 2014, the first Indian American Miss America.
Ladies and gentlemen, your new Miss America is Miss New York! Miss New York, Nina Davuluri!
And there is celebration Atlantic City style. She was not hiding her ethnicity or anything like it under a bushel there. Her talent was a wonderful dance. She danced to Doom Tana from the Bollywood movie Om Shanti Om, Bollywood fusion. Here's the sound of some of that performance by Miss America 2014, it turned out. Fusion of traditional Indian dance and real Bollywood pizzazz right there. Joining us now from Atlantic City, New Jersey, is Nina Davuluri, Miss America 2014, the first Indian American Miss America. She's had a bracing first couple of weeks since her crowning. She's responded in part with a hashtag Twitter campaign of her own to embrace and celebrate diversity. It is hashtag Circle of Unity. Nina Davuluri, Miss America 2014, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listen, we're going to expand our own circle in this hour, but what a first couple of weeks. It's not the first time you were in this contest. Not everybody likes these contests, but there you were, and then, boom, you got the crown. What do you think of what you've run into in your first 2 weeks as Miss America, Nina?
It was very, very surreal, and I was able to talk about this on stage, but I came into this organization with a vision for this organization, because for me, Miss America has always been known as the girl next door, but the girl next door is evolving as the diversity in America evolves, and she's not who she was 10 years ago, and she's not going to be the same person come 10 years down the road, and so for me, this was really about reaching out to a younger, newer demographic of young girls in America and finally having a role model such as Miss America that they can look up to and relate to.
You had to deal with some tweets. Okay, and they weren't pretty. They were ugly. But within a week, we saw this really is no joking manner. We had Dr. Prabhjot Singh, he's a professor of international affairs at Columbia University. He was out not far from his home in New York City, walking with a friend along the edge of Central Park there on the northern edge. Big group of young guys jumped on him, just gave him a terrible beating, knocked teeth out, broke his jaw, really a serious, serious beating. Also, Indian American. I mean, that must have said something to you right there. This is not just stage talk in a beauty pageant contest. This is still serious business in this country.
Right. It's a very real issue. And my platform, Celebrating Diversity Through Cultural Competency, is something that essentially I've been working for the past 3 to 4 years now. Many of these sort of acts and remarks stem from ignorance. And it's so important that we target our youth and make greater strides to institutionalize cultural knowledge.
You know, this is not a new issue in this country. And I wonder, your thoughts on this coming up. And we look back when we decided, you know, there's a big issue here and we should look at it. We'll bring on some others in a moment to join you, Nina, but it's great to have you with us. But we just looked back through the Miss America history. You're Miss America 2014. Go back to Miss America 2004, Erica Dunlap, African-American. Go back to Miss America 1994, Kimberly Clarence Aiken, African-American, Clarice Aiken. Go back to 1984, Miss America 1984, Vanessa Williams. I mean, each decade before you, it hasn't been a young white American. So why do you think this was still raising this kind of hullabaloo in 2014?
Wow. Well, that's uncanny that you made that connection, first of all. But, you know, it's, again, I think a lot of it stemmed from ignorance. And the reality of the situation is that we live in a country that's no longer as simple as black and white anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's been so, I suppose, the silver lining with all this Twitter backlash that's happened is that for every one negative tweet, comment, or post, I received hundreds and now thousands of positive words of encouragement and support from Americans all across the country and now the world for that matter. And so it's given me an avenue to be able to talk about this more and shed light on this issue.
You're a Syracuse kid. This is an immigrant nation. Tell us your family's story. Where are you in the process of the great long process of American arrival and assimilation?
Sure. I was born and raised in Syracuse, and then my family moved to Oklahoma when I was 4 years old, mm-hmm. and then to Michigan when I was 10, and I went to middle school, high school there, and I graduated from University of Michigan, and I moved back to Syracuse, and I've been there for the past 2 years now.
When it came time to compete, you know, you could have got up there and sang Oklahoma. You would have had justification. You lived in Oklahoma, you know, thing with a fringe on top and all that. But you didn't. You danced kind of Bharatanatyam, traditional Indian dance fused with Bollywood, full of sort of Indian costume regalia, beautiful silk sari and all the rest. How did you decide to go that very sort of ethnic path in your talent demonstration, mm-hmm. Instead of anything else? I mean, was this, did somebody whisper, here's a winning strategy to you? Was it ethnic pride? Was it just the talent you actually have? How'd you go that road?
Yes, it was actually a very difficult decision for me. I actually am a singer. I'm a much better dancer than I am mm-hmm. a singer, mm-hmm. but I have sang before, and I can't tell you how many people told me, if you're really serious about winning Miss America, go back to singing because a Bollywood dance will never win Miss America.
So go sing America the Beautiful or something.
Right. Right. Or Oklahoma.
I mean, why not? Yeah. But still, this is your own heritage and your talent.
Right. Right. Precisely. And for me, again, if I knew that going into this, if I was going to win Miss America the way that I wanted to, that the only talent I would be honored to perform, I suppose, is my classical training, Indian dance. And again, we fused that with Bollywood elements for the entertainment value. And now Bollywood is so much more popular in mainstream culture. But I had to stay true to my roots and true to my heritage. And having that moment on the Miss America stage in, you know, live on ABC, it was just an incredible opportunity.
So what do you think about you? Your appearance, your dance, your clothes, this moment we live in, what do you think it was that provoked this junk on Twitter? What do you think brought that out?
I think people are afraid of change, first of all. And also, it's very easy in the world of social media where you can hide behind a Twitter handle and you don't necessarily have to own your words, sadly. And so, again, I think a lot of it as well stemmed from ignorance. And now, like I said, it's given me an avenue to be able to talk about that more.
But ignorance of what, Nina?
Oh, I definitely think just being aware of cultures around us. And that's what I really promote with cultural competency is to first and foremost look inwards and rid ourselves of our own predisposed notions about people of different races, ethnicities, religions, backgrounds, because we all have them and we all have to overcome them together.
And it's serious. A week after that night and that Twitter flurry, Indian-American doctor beaten badly in New York City simply because of his appearance. Nina Davalori, Miss America 2014, is with us. Nina, let's go to our listeners for a second here. Cheryl in Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're on with Nina. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just calling. I just wanted to give my support. I think she makes an excellent point about diversity education. And I would just like to make the comment that it really needs to start early in school as opposed to waiting until people get to college. Because, you know, a lot of people in this country don't get to a four-year college.
Does it take four-year college to have an understanding that this is a diverse nation, Cheryl?
Well, you know, in Green Bay, Martin Luther King's birthday, they do not give the kids off of school here in Green Bay for Martin Luther King's birthday. I have a friend who, she refused to send her kids to school that day, but they were counted, you know, absent, you know, truant, whatever, for not coming to school that day. So there's a lot of places in this country that don't even recognize Martin Luther King. And he was a benefit to this entire country. He had so much to contribute, and they don't even recognize that just because this particular area doesn't have a high, you know, African-American population.
Cheryl, we've got it. You're pointing at something very interesting right there. We're going to dive right on in this hour. Miss America 2014, Nina Davaluri is with us from Atlantic City, of course, New Jersey today. Nina, we're glad you're here. We appreciate you jumping in here. We've got a whole panel we're putting together with you when we return. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour with Miss America 2014, Nina Davaluri. And more about diversity in this country today and how it's working. It is a big deal, big, big change this country's undergone already, much more to come. Nina Davaluri, a kind of icon of that for the past 2 weeks, and it was sort of a rough entry into her status. Who would have thought so? Go back all the way to 1983. Vanessa Williams talked about being the first African-American Miss America. This is 30 years ago.
I think now that I have won, it's going to make it easier for a lot of minorities. Even there was even a Puerto Rican contestant this year, and I think it'll make it a lot easier, and things can happen. But in terms of being the first, it means a lot to me, and I think that I'll be able to represent not just minorities but everyone.
30 years ago, the first African-American, the first non-white Miss America, and still in 2013, we've got issues. It was an issue right in the contest itself. It was interesting as for her question from one of the judges that night, September 15th. Nina got this question from celebrity judge and TV chef Carla Hall, put her on the spot on stage in the pageant.
Right, TV host Julie Chen revealed that when she was starting out, for career reasons, she had plastic surgery to make her eyes appear less Asian. What message does this send to young women?
Unfortunately, I don't agree with plastic surgery. However, I can understand that from a standpoint. But more importantly, I've always viewed as Miss America as the girl next door. And the girl next door is evolving as the diversity in America evolves. She's not who she was 10 years ago, and she's not going to be the same person come 10 years down the road. So I wouldn't want to change someone's looks or appearance, but definitely be confident in who you are.
Nina Davaluri that night at the pageant, and Nina is with us right now from Atlantic City. We can hear your voice a little higher there under the pressure of the contest, Nina, if I'm not mistaken. But you did pretty well there. But here this issue is right on the subject. You know, here's Julie Chen, CBS Talk, very, very prominent now, who felt not that many years ago that she had to take that move or that maybe it was a good idea, diminish her appearance of ethnicity in order to get ahead in this culture.
Yeah, I think it's really sad because I think it says more about our society than her decision that she felt the need that she had to make herself look less ethnic instead of embracing her culture and her heritage. And so it's actually really heartbreaking to hear that.
Of course, it's a while ago now, but it's not so very long. What do you think in your lifetime in this country? Are we going to be beyond issues of color and ethnicity for you, your kids, in your lifetime? Or is this something that this country, I mean, you came from India where these are still big issues. People said, you know, Nina has a skin tone that in India wouldn't win this competition. Are these things that live with us always, Nina?
Well, I certainly hope not, but it's important to make the distinction that, I believe that racism is taught. And one of the things, one of the studies that I watched was on CNN. Anderson Cooper did this study called Kids on Race. I think it was a couple years ago I saw this. And the studies found that children have a subconscious racial bias beginning as early as age 6. And the reason for this is because they learn it from their environment, their community, their peers. And so it's not simply about opening a discussion about race, because that hasn't necessarily proven to be effective, which is why I promote cultural competency. And with that comes along actually engaging children and our younger demographic with different cultures, whether it be learning a different type of dance, a different language, or trying a new cuisine. And all of these are engaging them, so they're actually having hands-on activities.
So get out there, learn, see, and feel it. Maybe we all change in that way. Nina Davaluri, Miss America 2014, is with us. Nina, stand by in Atlantic City. I want to invite a couple more voices into this conversation, if I may.
Great.
With us from New York is Anand Giridharadas. He's a columnist for the International Herald Tribune and the New York Times. Cleveland-born, Indian-American, son of immigrants, and guest any number of times on this show. Anand, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here today.
Great to be here. I'd always dreamed that I would be on your show as a pageant winner myself, but yeah. I will get over it in the first thing.
Hey, you're close. You're close to that crown today, Anand. Thank you for being with us. And with us from Nashville, Tennessee, is Tyson Brown, professor of sociology at Vanderbilt University. Tyson Brown, welcome to On Point. Glad to have you right here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
The last time we sat down together, I think, was on Broadway there in Nashville. The music was hopping, and I didn't know that we'd be sitting and talking with Miss America and you the next time, but wonderful to have you, Tyson. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much.
Anand, let me come first to you. You're Indian American. Here you see Nina. She's up on the stage. I don't know if you saw it at all, but I'm sure you heard about it. And then within nanoseconds, maybe even while it's underway, we get this Twitter tirade. Were you surprised by that, Anand, or not?
Yes and no. So I'm always surprised by, people who, are just kind of odious in their beliefs and treatment of other people. That never ceases to be a surprise, and yeah. I hope it never does for me. But I'm not surprised because, as Nina kind of referred to, it was actually a small number of people. And to be very blunt about it, every society has its semi-lettered peasants who don't really know a lot about stuff. The difference today is that your semi-lettered peasants have a smartphone and they can share their views with the world, and then BuzzFeed can aggregate their views and it becomes a story. But I sometimes think these stories distract us from how far we've come. The reality is we've almost eliminated the possibility of any respectable person with a respectable position in the society saying this. So just to give you two examples that I looked up for the show. So I just picked literally like two of the tweets out of one of the lists of racist tweets.
Yeah.
One of them is from a guy with 300 followers post controversy. The best photo he could come up with is him, passed out on a couch drunk while his friends point at him in case it wasn't obvious that he was passed out. He's standing beside an ATV in the mud. He lives in a rural county that is shrinking unlike the rest of the country. It's 97% white compared to 77% of the country, 2% foreign-born compared to 12%, half the national average of college-educated people, and 40% poorer than average. And I think it really speaks to the fact that we've actually, in most places where we've brought progress and education and good jobs, actually gone a long way to eliminating this kind of behavior. And we have more to go.
Is this how you plan to combat racism in this country, by calling people who have it sort of hillbilly peasants?
It nothing to do with being a hillbilly. It has to do with being racist and being backward in your thinking and attacking people. And I think it's the behavior that marks you that way. And the reason I use the word is every country has it. And it is the case that if suddenly a white or black woman were presented in India as Miss India, you might have the same problem from certain quarters. You will always have a certain number of people in society who are not part of the mobile, cosmopolitan, familiar with change class. And I think part of the goal is not to change everything that's in their heads, but to make sure these things don't escalate into crimes and violence. But some people who are not very exposed to other people will always have a little bit of intolerance.
I wonder, you're looking at that guy in that county, but here you've got Prabhupada Singh in your backyard in New York City, beaten severely in one of the most cosmopolitan cities in this country. Let's hold that just for a second. Tyson Brown, join us here. I mean, what do you make of this? You've looked at many angles of this question of diversity in this country. You know the African-American one particularly well, but not only that. Is this just a little blip on our national screen? What does it say about how we're doing or not doing in embracing our diversity these days? What we saw with, first of all, Nina Tyson.
Yeah, well, I think that the negative comments about Miss America are certainly disturbing, but they're not surprising. In terms of racial equality, you know, we've come a long way, but we're not there yet. And the color line still divides the haves from the have-nots. And, you know, we see this in terms of racial inequality in education, poverty, employment, wealth, and health. And we also see that through empirical evidence that Asians, blacks, and Hispanics continue to experience a great deal of discrimination. So by no means are we post-racial.
Is it all in – there's a certain depiction here. Well, this comes out of pockets of ignorance. Now, that can be a county somewhere with very low college attendance. It can also be in New York City where you've got, you know, a professor at Columbia University walking not far from his own home. Is it all to do with ignorance, or do we see this in sort of halls of power and halls of influence as well?
Yeah, well, I think that we see it. It's widespread. It's not just contained in rural or southern pockets. That this is a sort of a universal phenomena that we see throughout the U.S. and at all strata of society.
How do you think we're going to do in this century as this blossomed into its fullness? I mean, already most babies born in this country aren't white. By 2043, census says it'll be a majority non-white country. Does it look to you, Tyson, that we're on track to do fairly well with this, or do we still have major adaptation to live through, to work with?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we know that racism has largely evolved from the old-fashioned overt forms to more subtle sort of covert forms, consistent with the notion of colorblind racism. I believe you had a panelist just a few weeks ago, Dr. Eduardo Bonilla Silva from Duke University, who talked about this very mm-hmm. eloquently. Mm-hmm. He's one of the top scholars in the area. But basically, that colorblind ideology denies and minimizes the presence of historical as well as contemporary racism. And so, you know, we see that some have assumed that the election of Barack Obama, as well as other prominent successful minorities like Oprah or Jay-Z, they believe that this sort of signals the beginning of a post-racial America. And this is kind of consistent with this sort of tokenistic fallacy where people assume that the presence of people of color in influential positions is evidence of sort of complete eradication of racial obstacles. And we know that that's just not the case. You know, we could look back at examples in the Reconstruction era. You know, for instance, people could have erroneously assumed that the election of blacks to Congress would have meant the eradication of racial inequality. And obviously, we weren't there then and we're not there now.
Nina Davaluri, when you were growing up, did your parents talk with you about this country's racial history? Did you see yourself as exempt from that? Indian Americans have often been described as a model minority, high achieving and so on. Or did they say, hey, heads up, daughter, here's a particular culture with its own particular history. Be ready for this.
Actually, no, we never discussed, that I can recall at least, we never really discussed race in my household. And I think that's what was so difficult about growing up with my personal identity, because I had so many people ask me questions like what the red dot means, if I was going to have an arranged marriage or if I worship cows. And growing up in Oklahoma, I was often mistaken for Native American, and people would ask me what tribe I was in, and mm-hmm. I said, I don't know. and so it was very difficult for me, and I wish that my parents had opened that conversation and discussion about race, because children see colors, children see race, and some people might think that not bringing attention to it is the way to handle the situation, and it's simply not.
Anand, how about you? In your introduction to this country, its history, its current reality, did you feel exempt as an Indian American or part of that long story around race and racism in this country?
I mean, I think in many ways both, but I think in some ways part of what makes being an immigrant different from being born a minority here of kind of long ancestry in the U.S. is that you there's also this sense that your parents chose America over something that was obviously not serving them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so my father in particular did not feel that India had given him much of a great deal, despite the fact that he had the Indian card.
Mm-hmm.
And he came here, and they gave him a much better deal. And some of what comes with that is being looked at the wrong way. And although we were fortunate to not have too much of that, but my parents had the same kind of, is that a hole in your head, and is that the blood coming out, or, you know.
About the forehead red dot traditional in Hindu culture.
All of that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And my, you know, and sometimes my father turned it to our advantage by introducing us at parties as the original Cleveland Indians.
Oh, please. okay.
But there was always a sense that you were here and belonged to this. And when I was growing up, had to sort of hide the existence of this other thing going on. I think part of what's changed, and Nina's performance and choice of the Bollywood thing embodies this, mm-hmm. is that I think it has become slowly more possible to embrace dualism and to say, I am this and I am that. I am American and I do a Bollywood dance. And to turn things that used to be a but into an and. And that's actually very powerful. And I agree with both of their comments, including Tyson's, that this is a very serious problem. I don't mean to minimize it, but what I do mean to suggest is it's also worth remembering that compared to most other countries in the world, we do a great job of taking other countries' people and giving them opportunities that they often don't even have in their own societies, whether it's Brazil not having a non-white winner of their pageants, and the very legitimate questions that have been raised in India about whether Nina could have ever won in the country of her origin.
Eight African-American Miss Americas at this point, two Asian-American with Nina included. Tyson Brown, what about this dualism? You know, I think it was brave of Nina to do a traditional Indian dance on that stage where people have these kind of, you know, Susie images from years of yore. But is it perpetually dualism, or does all this become part of what it means to be American in this century?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's great that she decided to go with her traditional heritage and do that instead of sort of going the safer route, the more conventional route. And so, you know, it sort of conjures this notion that Mr. Giridhar talked about. He's sort of talking about this sort of hyphenated American phenomena, right? So mm-hmm. African-American or gay American or Latino American. And, you know, I think that the hyphenation question is an important one, you know. And to some extent, I think, you know, regarding whether or not hyphenation is good or bad, I think to some extent it depends on who's using that hyphenation and for what purposes. So, you know, on the one hand, among minorities, racial identity and solidarity can be really helpful. You know, we know that it does things like buffer the effects of racism. But then again, on the other hand, you know, you've got majority groups that sometimes can use hyphenation as a way of reinforcing separations or divisions or otherness of minority groups.
Yes, I can see that as well. That could work against solidarity. On the fourth hand, we're all hyphenated one way or another, though. How much that hyphen dissolves in Americanness has always been an issue. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Miss America 2014, Nina Davaluri, and more about diversity in this country now and how it is working. Nina Davaluri joins us from Atlantic City, New Jersey. Tyson Brown is with us, professor of sociology at Vanderbilt University from Nashville. Anand Giridhar Das is with us from New York, columnist at the New York Times, and Cleveland-born Indian American. Lots of interesting comments online here. David says, sure, there's racism here in the U.S., but compared internationally, I think we have a lot to be proud of. Well, yes, also difficult stuff. Brad says, I sent out a very loud woot when Nina won. Beautiful, smart, and the best of our country. And then a couple of questions for you, Nina. One from Gerald. He says, you must have anticipated some of that obnoxious, even evil response. But I'd like to know how, if there was more of it than you anticipated, and how it compared to your experience at the state level. And Holly asks, says, no one's connecting the dots between beauty pageants and racism, both being judgmental. Do we have to tolerate the former beauty pageants? Maybe they're even linked to the kind of judgmental attitude that gets us to the latter. But first, on what you anticipated versus what you got on this rough front, Nina.
I did anticipate those remarks. I had similar statements when I won Miss New York, and I knew that should I win Miss America, I would probably have the same response, but on a much larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't surprised, and it's funny because going into the stereotype of pageants as well, what many people don't see is that all the contestants have a 10-minute private interview with a panel of 7 judges. And so this is really where Miss America is won, in that interview room. And I remember talking about this in my interview, saying, as Miss New York, I have been called a terrorist. And the reality of the situation is that should I win Miss America, those remarks are probably going to happen, but I now know how to handle that in the appropriate manner. And so when that happened, I just remember thinking back to that interview moment that I had that I think was very powerful in my interview, and being able to handle this with the positivity that I had done. And so definitely, yes, again, with going along with the stereotype, there is certainly some sort of stereotype that comes with pageants. But again, it's really about that interview room.
Well, I imagine Holly would admire the way you handled those issues. She doesn't seem to like the sort of put you in a bikini, walk you down the aisle, and women are objectified, and there you're sort of in a terrain of judgment that she sees as linked to a whole lot of potentially rough things. I mean, you're smart. You're aspiring to be a doctor. I mean, you've got others saying, right on, Nina, thanks for representing people who look like me on that stage. On the other hand, why were you up there?
Well, first, let me distinguish between the Miss America organization and any other system, is that the Miss America organization is very much scholarship and service-based. And so I actually started competing in the Miss America's Outstanding Teen Program, which is meant to be a feeder into the Miss America system.
Yeah.
And through that program, I won $25,000 in scholarship money. And with that money and the help of my parents, I was able to graduate debt-free from the University of Michigan. And I took about a 5-year hiatus from the organization. And right now, I'm currently in the process of applying to medical school. And I had no means to pay for my education, really. And so I started competing again for Miss New York. And I won $10,000 as Miss New York and now $50,000 as Miss America. So I have $60,000 to put towards my education. And it's been a wonderful avenue for me to share my talent, my culture, my heritage, promote my platform, as well as pay for my education.
And you don't mind strutting your fine form a little bit to do that?
I mean, let's face it. I mean, a swimsuit is not required for the job of Miss America, but we are national television, and let's face it, we probably wouldn't have too many male viewers without that.
Let's go to our listeners. Scott in Waterford, Connecticut. Scott, what do you see on this diversity front?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
No, I think we've come a long way, but we still have a ways to go. I'm 53. I'm originally from New York, lived there 23 years, and was taught racism, like one of your speakers said a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. unfortunately, by my father. My mother, hid it from us, but later in life, I actually saw some from her, too. My wife and I, when we met and married and decided to have kids, made a conscious decision never to teach our children racism. And I'm happy to say they're 25, 23, and 21, and they're not racist. You know, I still, I never showed it to them, but sometimes I feel things, but I never express them. But I think now their generation, or them in particular, will grow up. And, I could tell by their friends. My daughter's best friends were Asian and Indian in high school. And I was proud of that,
Yeah.
But I think we still have, I work with fellas my age, a little younger, a little older, and I see that still, they haven't taken that to teach their kids that. And unfortunately, maybe their kids will grow up and say, hey, well, you know what? I'm not going to poison my kids' mind when they're growing up. I'll give them, let them, make their own decisions based on life experience.
A voice of optimism right there, Scott. And I'm really glad to hear it. I appreciate everything about that. I appreciate your call. One more right here, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Vikram is on the air. Hi, Vikram. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Tom, I just want to share my story. I've been here for the last 25 years. I came from Bombay, India, and went to high school here, went to college here, and I'm a pharmacist by profession. When I started as a working, there was a lot of ignorance. A lot of people in this area didn't know who are Indians, who are brown people, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And now I see a lot of awareness in that area. When I first started, they used to tell me, go back to your country. Now I'm a pharmacy manager for my pharmacy here at my company here.
Yeah.
And my two kids were born here. And they pretty much tell them brown hillbillies. We are so engraved in the society. So,
Vikram, I hear that we can all hear that sort of wonderful Bombay/Kentucky drawl you've got there. What do you see coming down the road? Do you think we're going to be just fine with our diversity in this century ultimately, or do we have more trouble to come?
No, I think we have come long ways. We still got to go a long way. There are a lot of hidden discrimination. The only way to get over it is through the education. And fantastic job by Nina. We were so proud of it. My kids, when we were watching that program, and we were all standing up, and all my wife, my two kids, our mouths were open. We couldn't believe that Bollywood is on national television.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic, fantastic.
Vikram, thanks for your call. Nina, that must make you feel pretty good.
Yes, thank you so much. It's been very surreal because the support from the Indian community, it's just been this outpour of love, and I can't thank them enough for it.
Vikram, good luck with your family right there. Sapna in Boston, thanks for calling. Sapna, you're on the air with Nina Davalori.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, just first of all, on a personal level, how exciting it was to see Nina. I'm also Indian American, but I'm in my 40s, and when I was growing up, I don't think this was even something that we would see. So I think for people who've, born and raised here, who are white, who don't perhaps recognize that feeling of recognition when you see somebody who looks like you doing everyday things, it's a real jolt and a real joy. And I think that some of that gets lost if you aren't someone who's immigrated or looks very different. And I think just based on the conversation, I think there's still a lot of fear. If you're not white, then why are you here, or sort of who are you? And that question, a lot of times it's innocent, just wanting to know where you're from and what your immigration story is. But a lot of it is also fear-based. There are people who are afraid that maybe they won't, you're taking my job or you're taking my position. I think when South Asians are in medical positions, which take a lot of talent and education and maybe are harder to achieve, that sometimes that racism doesn't get put that way because it's not, they're sort of doing something that maybe I couldn't do. But Miss America just seems so ordinary and everyday and attainable. And to have someone who doesn't sort of fit that image of what people might think, I think that brings up some fear for people.
Yeah, the very girl next door part that Nina talks about.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I also think, I don't think anyone's spoken about 9/11 and what that's done to many, many people, no matter what your background is in this country.
Which brings out that sort of terrorist idea around just a certain look, a certain association. It's very far afield from Nina's heritage, but nevertheless, she got tagged with it in some of that Twitter junk, Sapna.
And I think, when a white person commits a crime, I don't think many white people wonder, gosh, I hope everybody else doesn't think I'm going to be like that. But when a person of color, when something negative happens, I think that there's still something in our psyche and in deeply embedded in this country that sort of brings up some of that. Not in everyone at all, but there is pieces of that when somebody reaches a high, a very public position like Miss America, it just sort of opens it up to let some of it out.
Sapna, those are terrific observations, and I appreciate your call so much. Tyson Brown, help us with a little long view here. I mean, the African-American experience is centuries long. Just last month, we had the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech on the Mall in Washington, and 50 years on from that, Martin Luther King Jr. and all the rest, people still looking at the African-American experience today when you look from that, through that prism, through those very knowing eyes that have dealt with this for a long time on this continent, what does that make you think about where we're headed in this century? Do the, does all these big new strands of immigration make a kind of accommodation, embrace of diversity more likely, Tyson? Does the long African-American experience of prejudice say, watch out, it's not that simple? What does the African-American familiarity with this issue tell us about where we may be headed?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And I'm unfortunately not all that optimistic. You know, I think that we have, in fact, come a long ways from the days of slavery, Jim Crow, and certainly since civil rights legislation. Unfortunately, we still know that there are deep divisions and high levels of anti-black sentiment, and that African Americans experience a disproportionate amount of discrimination in the realms of education, when they're applying for jobs, when they're looking for housing, in consumer and credit markets as well. And so I think that while there is increasing racial and ethnic diversity, we have to be careful to not assume that demography is destiny, because I think that that there's no evidence to indicate that is the case.
Country is minority, as we mm-hmm. call it these days, isn't there some kind of destiny written in that?
Well, you know, to the extent that these numbers will lead to increased political clout, I think that's certainly an avenue where we could see some changes. However, I think we also have to think about, you know, not just the numbers, but who holds the power and the wealth. And so I think that wealth is a key feature here. And we know that there are tremendous wealth inequalities. And in fact, African Americans have about 5% of the wealth of whites. Latinos have about 7% of the wealth of whites, and these have been this gap has been widening in the last 10 years. And so I think that you know, it's not just about numbers, but it's also about resources and political clout.
Nina uses the phrase "circle of unity." One wonders if how exactly that unity will play out even across ethnic lines within this big question, this big American panorama. Let's go to Lynn calling from Harwinton, Connecticut. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hello to your guests. I have an anecdote that I want to share. My mother was Miss Minnesota in 1937.
Okay.
And she came from an extremely poor family in a small town in Minnesota, uh-huh. did wind up in Minneapolis, and one of her prizes was a paid trip to the Miss America pageant in Atlantic City. I have a panoramic photograph of the Miss America pageant on one of the steel, I think it was the steel pier. It was certainly sponsored by the steel
wow.
pier.
Wow, early days in Miss America, and your mom right there is Miss Minnesota. What do you see in that photograph, Lynn?
An incredible, although they're all white faces, mm-hmm. there is incredible diversity of people. And I think that's just kind of an indication of maybe where it started. I think the Miss America pageant got very homogenized in the 50s and 60s, but perhaps on a larger scale, the pageant is now reflecting our society again.
More homogenized in the 50s than in the 30s when your mom's there? What's the diversity you saw in the 30s that you did in the 50s?
Oh, the diversity of body types, shapes, sizes, looks.
Really?
I mean, unbelievable. Absolutely the girl next door. My mother got into the pageant because, of course, this was in the Depression, and this was a way to get some money. I think her prize was like $200 in a wardrobe, I think she said, from JCPenney's.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
was that was huge for her. And the way she got into it was someone said, hey, you're good looking. Why don't you go try it?
But diversity of another kind in that photograph from 1937 in Atlantic City, body type and all the rest. Anand, where do you think this goes? Nina's chosen Circle of Unity as her hashtag to kind of counteract the bad stuff. Is this going to be an issue of unity? Or do we break into all kinds of shades and colors and classes? And, you know, does diversity become something else, something different than the old black-white story fundamentally in the years ahead?
I think it is becoming more complicated, and in some ways classes now coming to rival race as a dividing line. And just to step back and take the kind of the same long view you referred to earlier, mm-hmm. I think, you know, America is amazing and it has a lot of problems, but it's really amazing. And it's amazing because actually more than other places you go, it allows itself every generation or two to completely change hands. And there are persistent wealth holdings and other things, as Tyson mm-hmm. spoke about. But every few generations, it belongs to, you know, for the first few hundred years, different types of white people. And, you know, the Irish were mm-hmm. under the bus. And then the Germans were under the bus. And then they are as white as anybody else. And now you have a black president. And there will always be more work to do. But a lot of the people here have more promise here than they had where they came from.
It's been an amazing couple of weeks already in the Nina Davalori story. Nina, are you excited about this year ahead, or do you feel like you're going to be sort of bumping into this stuff all year long? How do you feel about it?
I'm very excited and so honored to share my journey with all of America, so it's going to be a great year.
Oh boy, you've got just the right Miss America tone there. You've got it. You're right on tone in that most fundamental way. We wish you luck with it. You're brave, and with your career as well. Thank you, Nina. Thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. Miss America 2014. Anand Giridharadas, Tyson Brown, great to have both of you with us as well. Thanks so much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.